With us this morning from the University of Akron, professor of political science, my good friend, Dr. John Green, with us this morning on WAKR. John, a lot to talk about, but first of all, let's go to the pause with China on the tariffs. I think a lot of people want to see some sort of trade deal done. Talk about what came together, who blinked first, what do you know on this story?
Well, you know, it's really kind of interesting because, of course, Trump campaigned on increasing tariffs, and then he followed through on his campaign promise, I think, in a way that shocked even people, you know, on his side. You know, it's a very dramatic increase in tariffs, particularly on China. And some people said, well, you know, Trump's going to remake the global trading system. Other people said, no, it's just a negotiating strategy, and this is the way Trump goes about doing things. And, you know, the recent news of the talks between the U.S. and China maybe suggests the latter, that maybe this is more a negotiating strategy. I mean, of both countries, the U.S. and China, just really ramped up tariffs that looked really bad for each of the economies, and then sort of cooler heads prevailed. And it looks like, you know, they brought the tariffs back down temporarily, and there does seem some prospects for, you know, a good trade deal that'll prevent some of the economic disruption that a lot of people are worried about.
John, when we talk about a trade deal with China and the United States, talk about what needs to happen as far as how the United States is looking at China, just so people understand.
Well, there's, you know, China's the big competitor to the United States, both economically, militarily, and in terms of international relations. You know, two great big countries, you know, the number one and number two economies in the world. So a lot's at stake here. I think what the United States is looking for is three different things. One is better treatment for American goods in China. And that this isn't just tariffs. There are also non-tariff barriers. Those are all the rules and regulations that prevent American goods from coming into China, into Chinese markets. And, you know, that we think that needs to change. Now, the Chinese have a little different view, right, because there's a lot of jobs and communities at stake, you know, in China as well. And then on the other hand, you know, we would like to see some higher tariffs on some of those inexpensive, let's not call them cheap, but inexpensive goods that are coming in to the United States where we, you know, are threatening some of our communities, some of our workers. And then finally, there's the whole question of currency manipulation. And for a long time, including under the Obama and Biden administrations, there have been complaints against China for manipulating their currency in a way that favors them and disadvantages the United States. So, you know, these are the three big issues, and they're all interconnected in pretty complicated ways.
And this is real important, not only, right, John, for China and the United States, but when you look at global economic concerns, a lot of people are keeping an eye on this possibility of this trade deal.
They certainly are, because if United States and China could come to some understanding that both countries could live with, you know, that would provide a degree of stability in the international economy, which, frankly, is under an awful lot of stress, and not just because of the trade war. I mean, a whole lot of things are changing in the international economy. So, you know, a good deal, one that would last and would work, would be to the benefits of just about everybody.
With us from the University of Akron, professor of political science, Dr. John Green. John, I don't think I've talked to you since that mineral deal came down with President Trump, the U.S., Zelensky, and the Ukraine. And I was on the air talking to you that was a pretty big deal when you look at these minerals that we're able to secure. And also it looks at how the EU is looking at that. And I imagine Vladimir Putin wasn't real happy to see that happen. But how did you look at that mineral deal with the Ukraine?
Well, I saw it in both economic terms and political terms. In economic terms, it did provide a new source of these really critical minerals, minerals that are really important for electronics and computers and, you know, the whole digital world, which is, you know, the world we live in now. And so, and a lot of those, another source of those minerals is China, right? A nation we're having some tensions with. So I think in economic terms, it was a good thing. But politically, it gives the United States an economic interest in peace in Ukraine. And, you know, President Trump's been very reluctant, as was President Biden, to put American troops on the ground. Some Europeans have talked about maybe a peacekeeping force, but to have you know, the United States with an economic interest sends a really important message to Russia, which is that this isn't just about troops. It's also about the economy. And, you know, the United States will defend its economic interests. So I think politically it was an important move. Now, we'll see what comes of it, but there's some prospects that that could help bring about peace.
And, John, I imagine a lot of the EU countries were wiping some sweat from the brow, too, when that came down. They certainly wanted the United States involved in the Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely. And there was some real fear among the NATO countries that the U.S. was going to walk away. Maybe not from Europe, but from Ukraine. And that worried them. After all, a lot of these countries are very close to the Ukraine. So this has was very important to them.
With us is Dr. John Green, professor of political science, University of Akron. So let's move to the Middle East now, John. And that's where President Trump currently is. Yesterday, making the announcement about getting rid of sanctions against Syria. He really wants to change the Middle East. So talk about his mission and how effective he has been and how the world is looking at President Trump in the Middle East right now.
Well, you know, I think the world is looking at this with a certain amount of excitement, but also some skepticism. There have been many U.S. presidents that wanted to remake the politics of the Middle East, and it's just a region with all different kinds of conflicts. But I think it's really important that Trump went to Saudi Arabia and the other countries in the Persian Gulf, because these are in many ways very big players in Middle Eastern politics. They're important to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, where they tend to be, you know, more on the Palestinian side. But also, one of the big players in the region is Iran. And the Arab countries in the Persian Gulf have some real fear of Iran and their particular politics. And, of course, Trump is also trying to work out a deal with Iran over the possibility of nuclear weapons. And, you know, there's a little bit of the carrot and the stick. And then, of course, an opening in Syria. You know, the Assad regime fell, much to the surprise of everybody. And, you know, here's an opportunity to have a reset in a country that's been deeply troubled for many years.
John, with all that being said, and we've talked about the Ukraine, we've talked about the EU, Vladimir Putin, the Middle East, and China. I think you and I would both agree that the first 4 years of President Trump, he really lacked in his global politics. That was really one of the weaknesses where President Biden was able to go in, and that was one of his strengths. How do you view it right now with President Trump and how he has handled the political global arena?
Well, you know, I think whether one agrees with his policies or not, I think we could conclude that President Trump in his second term is much more effective, at least here in the early going. I think he learned some lessons from his first term. He has a much better team. You know, Marco Rubio is a very competent Secretary of State. I mean, there have been a few bumps along the road in his national security team, but there's a much more higher level of confidence in this administration. And I think, you know, Trump is listening more to his advisors than he did in his first term, but also he has more of a strategy. And what's emerging is that it's all about the economy. And that if the economy can be made better in Europe, in the Middle East, in with China, then a lot of our tensions will, and you know, military problems will decline in magnitude. We'll have to wait and see if he can pull that off. But I think that greater vision, that broader vision, is to the president's benefit as he deals with all the complexity of international relations.
You mentioned the word trust. I imagine the word surprise came up by many, and that was the Ukraine deal, going back to that mineral deal, because so many people had aligned President Trump with Vladimir Putin, and rightly so, right? But to him to sign that mineral deal with the Ukraine certainly wasn't to the likeness of Vladimir Putin in Russia. He had to take a step back when he saw that deal come down.
You know, I think so. And it is interesting, something that we haven't heard a lot about in the news, at least. You know, the president of Ukraine and the president of Russia met in Istanbul in Turkey to start talking about peace. But, you know, in the trip to the Middle East, there are trade deals. when he talks about, President Trump talks about a deal with Iran. Trade is on the table. So you get a sense that geoeconomics is really central to this administration.
As strange as it sounds, because all of us were up in arms with these tariffs about a month ago, do you have a sense that the word tariff is starting to sink in globally with the United States, and is this working for the Trump administration?
You know, it remains to be seen. I think people are, you know, not quite as frightened, not quite as disturbed as they were when, you know, he announced Liberation Day and increased tariffs. I think the Trump administration is conditioning people to the idea that tariffs are a tool for negotiation. But we'll just have to see how that plays out, because it could be, when all is said and done, tariffs will be high. And that means that certain goods and services will be more expensive to Americans. Not something that a lot of people will be excited about.
And then my final question for you, John, has to do with this jet. Both members of the GOP and the Democrats were very critical of the gift jet to President Trump. So talk a little bit about this from your perspective.
Well, you know, he managed, by accepting the jet, President Trump managed to make everybody mad. You know, a lot of people on his side were saying, what in the world are you doing? And, of course, people on the other side, they're thinking about, you know, there's a big conflict of interest here, you know, and all kinds of issues. So, you know, when I look at it, you know, over time, you and I have talked about this, there are certain aspects of the presidency that have become more and more controversial. One of them is pardons. That's been developing for a while and, of course, includes both Presidents Trump and Biden. But accepting gifts is also something that has become more and more fraught as time has gone forward. And, of course, this is probably, in monetary terms, the single biggest gift that a foreign power gave to a foreign country gave to an American president. But, you know, I think it fits with some of President Trump's narcissism. You know, he likes the idea of flying on this luxury jet, and it appeals to his vanity. So, you know, it might be very shrewd politics on the part of the country of Qatar.
All right. John, great stuff this morning. Thank you again for terrific insight from top to bottom on what we've seen politically in the last couple of weeks. Always appreciate you sharing your cup of coffee in the morning with us, my friend. Thanks again.
You're very welcome. Have a good day, Ray.